Hello, I'm Cameron Berg here with your latest from the Siren News team. First up, if you tuned in last week, you may have heard about the story about the swan that was found with a sock over its head. A week on, the rescued swan has been released and was pictured reunited with her partner and has recently laid eggs. Founder of the Yorkshire Swan and Wildlife Rescue Hospital, Dan Sidley, has said that the swan was only separated for a short amount of time from its partner. That's nice, isn't it? Last Thursday, local elections took place and many Labour seats were lost and turned Conservative. However, Labour County Councillor Robert Parker won his seat once more. Sarah May Bocheri reports more on Robert's victory and the plans he is currently working on.
County Councillor Robert Parker has won his seat in Carholme 8 times, first elected in 1989 for the Labour Group. Although Robert was more than happy with his re-election, he is now wary of there being no Labour County Councillors outside of Lincoln.
Didn't do too well as a party. In fact, with 70 seats, we've only got four councillors and they're all in Lincoln. So when it comes to the county council, it's a bit difficult to be able to argue that we are representing people from all over the county. We're just a Lincoln-based organisation now. So that's disappointing. But we're going to do our best to hold the controlling Conservative group to account.
Robert's main plans for his next term range from keeping streetlights on later at night, hoping to make women feel safer in the dark, to ensuring a carbon-neutral county council to aid the climate crisis.
We have always argued that we should have zero carbon policies in place by 2030. The Conservative disagreed and said 2050 is plenty soon enough. We're going to be challenging that all the way to make sure that we can move to be carbon-neutral by the end of this decade.
There was also news for a return of in-person county council meetings, which was announced this month by Parliament, as the emergency legislation around COVID wasn't renewed. Robert is excited to get back in person and debate face to face.
Those people who take decisions should be accountable, and we want to see what they look like when they're arguing face to face. Now, that may sound a tad old fashioned, but at the moment, the way that we conduct most of our business, particularly at a national level, is in Parliament with Boris Johnson having to account, stand up there and be challenged.
Robert is excited for the future of the Lincolnshire County Council and hopes to continue to hold people account and be a part of key decisions. Sarah May Bocheri, Siren Radio.
In response to this, Conservative County Councillor Tom Dyer said...
Yeah, so I think Councillor Parker has put quite a negative tint on it when really the County Council, we've got a positive plan for climate change. The Conservative group, we were just re-elected and a big part of our manifesto was the County Council's Green Master Plan. So it's a comprehensive document that lays out our path to carbon neutrality by 2050. But that is the target.
More from Councillor Dyer in Siren News Extra. Lincolnshire County Council have announced that the nighttime road closures surrounding the Eastern Bypass will begin this week as roadworks enter their third phase. Works on the Eastern Bypass has been going on for years now, facing numerous setbacks due to flooding, bureaucracy, and, well, just bad luck. Roads will only be closed at night, with the road closures changing as work on the bypass continues. So make sure that you stay up to date on the County Council website if you are heading out of the eastern side of town. Urgent care patients at Lincoln County Hospital are now being treated in a brand new £3.5 million purpose-built centre. The investment was funded by the Department of Health and Social Care as part of a plan to upgrade 25 A&Es across the country. This plan hopes to prevent overcrowding and improve infection control around the pandemic. Now here's a weird one. An escape room in Lincoln has been broken into. Yes, you heard that right. The burglary in question saw the loss of 5 laptops and over £2,000 of damage. General Manager for Escape Lincoln, Rosie Smith, said the break-in will delay its reopening.
Unfortunately, it means we can't open on the 19th as we had been planning to, which is a bit of a blow. It's such a shame that it's happened so close to us opening. We're hoping that it's only going to be a matter of weeks to get replacements for the laptops. So at the moment, the booking system is just suspended for that site. We're hoping to have it back open again in as little as weeks.
To celebrate the 76th anniversary of VE Day and raise awareness of mental health, RAF Corporal Bruce Brennan ran 76 miles around 3 RAF bases. Bruce finished the run in just under 15 hours, raising £1,400 for the RAF Benevolent Fund. Reporting at RAF Coningsby, Bruce Brennan covered the distance to RAF bases Cranwell, Waddington and Lincoln before finishing at the Dambusters Memorial in Woodhall Spa. It was a long marathon, but Bruce had good motives.
There were three reasons. I wanted to commemorate the 76 years for VE Day, and I really wanted to raise awareness for mental health, but I also wanted to show my little boys that help is always available.
Corporal Brennan wasn't alone on his journey. In part, he was joined by supporters from his local running group, the Woodhall Spa Steamers.
I would love to thank the Woodhall Spa Steamers for their efforts on Friday. They're an absolutely amazing running group from Woodhall. They helped me from start to finish. I couldn't thank them enough. And also had some Air Force personnel themselves who they took their own time at their own day to come and run with me. And I really couldn't thank them all enough. They made it happen.
Rebecca Sherrick, a spokesperson for the RAF Benevolent Fund, explained how they can help veterans struggling with their mental health.
We're a charity that looks after serving RAF personnel, veterans and their families. He chose our charity because he was inspired by the work we do to support serving personnel with their mental well-being. That's something that he has struggled with in the past. He had his own mental health challenges a couple of years ago where he said himself that he reached a very dark place and he didn't really know where to turn to for help. If there's any RAF veterans that all their families in need are listening, if they want to find out what the fund can do to help them, visit rafbf.org and you can find out all the information you need there.
Around 250 black and white portraits will be put up around Lincoln as part of the Inside Out project. The national project aims to give everybody the opportunity to make a statement and display members of the community in large black and white portraits. Lincoln's take on this, We Are Central Bank, launched today. 415,000 people across 138 countries are involved with the Inside Out project. Lincoln Cathedral's collection of rare artifacts are now available online for the world to see. The online catalogue, accessed through the cathedral's website, will share images and information on the histories of some of Lincoln Cathedral's most valuable treasures. The cathedral's curator, Fern Dawson, explained why this was so important.
It's important from the cathedral's point of view to actually be able to share our wonderful treasures. For 1,000 years, we've been collecting objects. So we have chalices, patterns, pieces of archival material as well. We have the library collection. So actually being able to give greater access to the public is really what we want to do. It's what the cathedral has done for many years is share.
Sophie Everett, history graduate and student teacher, was very excited.
As someone who's been to university, done placements in Archive Sport and worked with archives, it's very, very valuable to us because we can use it in assignments. You can use them just for research generally. You can use them as well later on when you're doing research outside of uni. You can use them in classrooms and education. That could spark their interest in history, which I think as a historian and a student, it's imperative we pass on these artifacts to the next generations.
Lincoln Cathedral have announced that they will be opening their very own family-run cafe. Meadow Brown Restaurant, that run a number of restaurants up and down the country, have secured a contract to run the brand new cafe next to the cathedral. The cafe will open this summer in the Old Deanery Visitors Centre, which has been at the heart of the £16 million restoration project since 2016. Now in sport, it's Lucy Carter.
Thank you, Cameron. And now for sport. Lincoln City's LNER Stadium will open its doors to fans for the first time in over 430 days for the League One playoff semi-finals. The Imps are playing for the first leg versus Sunderland next Wednesday, and over 3,000 socially distanced supporters will watch the game. The ballot has been opened to get tickets. The smell of freshly cut grass has filled the air, and the sound of leather on willow has started to ring out around many cricket grounds across the county. With this in mind, we are just over 2 weeks away from the start of the National County Cricket Association minor county season, where Lincolnshire County Cricket Club will take to the field for the first time in 2 years. Our reporter George Conway has more on this story.
With the NCCA season just around the corner, Lincolnshire County Cricket Club are in high spirits with their first game on the 30th of May, as they travel to Manor Park to take on four-time champions Norfolk. I spoke with Director of Cricket Mark Fell, who told me how excited everybody was to be getting back out on the cricket field again.
Well, that's the most important thing, George, because with not being able to play any games last year, apart from a couple of in-house friendlies that we arranged, nobody knows how everybody's going to react to all this at the moment, because you've had a full year off. And I'm hoping everybody goes in with the same enthusiasm that I'm going to do. And that's what we're going to be trying to do.
After the cancellation of all NCCA competitions last season due to the coronavirus pandemic, Fell believes getting out and playing again is the most important thing.
I think it's very important to get on the field again and just get used to doing the things you were doing before. Because a lot of lads will have forgot what they do, and they've had a year off where nobody knows how everybody's going to react. And just to get used to doing your old little bits, your old little quirks as a batter, as a bowler. And all we've got to try and do is treat it the same as normal. And that's certainly what I'll be trying to do anyway.
Lincolnshire have also strengthened their squad this year, signing former Nottinghamshire and England bowler Mark Footit. The left-arm quick will bring a wealth of experience to the side and will be an important player for the county over the next few years.
The most important thing for me is that he's going to help all our other bowlers. He's going to help your Curtis Free. He's going to help your Dan Freeman. He's going to help your other youngsters that are going to come through. And what I'm going to be doing with Mark Footit is we're going to try and get him coming and captaining our development side as well, so he can help our younger bowlers, which is our next stage of players coming through to the Lincolnshire main side as well.
Now over to... Back to Cameron for the weather.
Thank you, Lucy. And now for the local weather forecast. Expect to see cloudy skies this evening with an average temperature of about 8 degrees. Moving into the weekend, there is a high chance of rain on Saturday morning, so grab an umbrella if you plan to head out. Watch out for an odd shower on Sunday too, with a high temperature of 12 degrees. Actually, maybe just don't go out this weekend. It doesn't look too well. As we look into next week, expect showers from Monday to Friday with cloudy skies and an average temperature of 14 degrees. So you know what? Maybe this is the perfect time to stay in and not do what Boris says and go out on Monday. Right, now, that is all we have time for in this bulletin. But don't go anywhere, because we have Siren News Extra coming right up. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can hear us same time, same place next week on Siren News. Goodbye.
Hold on now. The new Siren Radio.
How do you like your radio news? Do you want it with a little bit of extra sparkle? Try this. Siren Radio News Extra, every Friday, just after 5.
This is Siren Radio.
107.3.
Welcome to this week's News Extra with me, Sarah, Lucy and Cam. It's our chance to just chat and have fun and let you all know what we've been up to this week. So I'll let everyone have a little chat.
Yeah. It's just a little bit for us to mess around and show you some news. Later on the show, we do have two election interviews, one which was done by you, Sarah, and the other one which was the Conservative response to Rob Parker's controversial comments. To be fair, they weren't that controversial, but
they weren't.
It's always good to have a response either way. We also have a special feature from Chelsea Abbott, who actually has just finished university officially today. She only has exams left, but she doesn't have to learn ever again. She's going into the real world. Yeah, we have a special interview from her about the Lincolnshire Heritage Explorer, which is this fun online thing where you can go online and look at ruins.
Amazing.
Usually I think we call that right. Google, but I think it's more specialized. I don't know, I haven't checked it out. Chelsea has a lot more on that in the future. So yeah, you've had the bulletin. Now it's time for the extra bit. So how have you felt about the news this week? I feel like it's been a bit slow and weird.
Yeah, it's been weird, hasn't it? I feel like it was slow towards the start of the week, but now, today, with all this stuff about the vaccine and COVID and the Indian strain, it's like all come today and it's like boom, boom, boom. It's been a bit like, oh, I thought it was a slow news week and it's not been.
It's been a slow week, but it always hits on a Friday, I think.
Yeah, the journalists are like, let's get some stuff. It's a Friday. We've had nothing this week. Let's get some. Oh, it could be another lockdown.
Yeah, it has been a nightmare getting new stuff. We have like lots of interesting little bits of news, but nothing devastating has happened yet. Obviously, you mentioned there's the Indian strain. That's in international news. And besides that, it's just been people like settling back into Parliament. Obviously, Parliament reopened and everyone's just been sort of like getting used to being at work again, I suppose, in the government aspect. But then like global news, everything's just I've been a bit bored. And then Friday, as usual, we're hit by all this. Yeah.
Oh, it's been crazy. Although towards the end of the week, I suppose, all the stuff that's happened with Israel and Palestine.
Oh, of course.
Which has been quite awful to watch and hear about. And that's, I was surprised to see it in the news so much, to be fair. And I'm glad that it's been heavily reported on the way it's starting to be. At first, people were like, ooh, like not talking about it too much. But now it's like, we're here to talk about it. It's refreshing to see a bit.
Yeah, especially because like coverage of Israel and Palestine, historically, it's always been something that we're not supposed to talk about. Like, if you know what I mean. I feel there's a lot of pressure for journalists, especially, to not say the wrong thing around that, because we can't, like, it's strange to be non-biased in something that seems to carry so much bias.
Yeah.
It's almost like one of them conflicts. You can't not pick a side.
Yeah, of course. And people immediately look for a journalist to pick a side. But really, if anything, it's quite refreshing to see that it's been reported on, and which it hasn't. It's been such a grey area. It's been such a... No, I don't want to say taboo. It's not that. It's just who people have allies with and the grey areas of journalism. And it was one of those for a while. But it's nice to see that those areas are starting to go away a bit and people are willing to talk about it, at least. Educate. That's the main thing of journalism, education.
Yeah, that's our job as a journalist, isn't it? To make sure that we give people what they want to hear and what they need to hear sometimes. Because... I don't know about you, but thinking back, I've never really heard anything about, I didn't even know what Palestine was before all of this stuff this week.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that is very relevant, because like a lot of people didn't know about this problem because the media have been so like muted about it. This is a heavy topic to come in on.
It's honest.
But it is scary as like a reporter. I don't know about you two, but I actually have my back up a little bit now going, are we supposed to be talking about Israel and Palestine? Because it has been such a taboo like all my life, growing up like around journalists and like, you know, this kind of aspect. It's been one of those things you don't talk about because it's too contentious a topic. If you choose a side, immediately you could be hated by like half of your viewership, or it's like you could be ousted so easily for even reporting on that. So I really respect those guerrilla journalists going out now and actually like putting their head on the block and saying, this is what Hamas is, this is what Israel's doing, and this is what,
even more so like the journalists that are there in those countries reporting firsthand. I couldn't imagine how terrifying that is.
It must be.
I know that they've got like press jackets on and everything, but in reality, if bombs come in and you're in the line of fire, you're putting your life on the line to inform people. I think that's so commendable. And those people out there this week are insane for doing that.
Amazing. Scarier still, because of the nature of this conflict, like especially because it's mainly information based, I'd say. I feel like journalists are a massive target. I mean, obviously, you see the ones with press jackets, but I wonder how many have just thrown theirs in the bin just out of the worry that they'll be targeted because of, being press and being journalists. Ooh, big props to them, those in Israel and Palestine right now. Actually doing the reporting and being brave enough to do that.
Really respectful, yeah, completely. Yeah.
Honestly, really admire them.
Yeah, especially because, I'm studying for my dissertation right now and doing all the reading around my dissertation, which is about the sun. I won't go into it too much because I don't want to be told off.
We're governed by Ofcom. We're allowed to say what we want about newspapers.
It's just about some of the negativity about the sun. In the past 5 years, there's been a hashtag that's cropped up on Twitter called hashtag the scum. I don't know if anyone's seen it. No one's looked into it of why it's there. And I thought, I'm going to look into the causes of that. And like this second wave of negative hatred towards the sun. And one of the things I've looked at is the role of a journalist and how like it affects you personally, that job. And I found out that, don't quote me on this because I can't remember the exact figure, could be globally 12 journalists die every week from being murdered in like places of conflict and stuff like that. And I never knew that. Like I knew of some of the, especially in the times where ISIS was quite a big topic and they were spreading their territories. A lot of journalists got caught then, which was absolutely devastating. But it's still happening. And I thought it's opened up my eyes a bit that, yeah, journalism can be done within the realms of your home right now, what we're doing, but it can also be done like in a country where you're fleeing from invaders or attackers. And that's eye-opening, studying that.
I think it was my first big job, you know, trying to stretch out as a journalist, because I wasn't sure how to do it, but I just went big because that's what I knew. I tried to get sort of female activist groups in China. I was trying to speak to, you know, like women's rights activist groups in China. And there was a few women that I was talking to who were part of this like main group, and they were fleeing to Hong Kong. And the big plan was, is I tried to get a grant to go over there and see them. And in order to apply for this grant, I needed to, you know, make certain that I could do this. So I got all their contact details and stuff and sent them to, you know, this group who were going to pay for it. It was the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who have recently broke up. But yeah, it was that foundation. They were going to pay for me to go to China and like sort that out. But when they contacted my contacts in China, they got nothing. And it turned out I saw in the news that they'd all been arrested. And so that was, I don't think it was my fault that they were arrested. I don't think like they were caught found to be talking. I think it was just because the Chinese knew, like the government knew what they were doing. They were trying to speak out and they just arrested them all. And one of them was deported to Hong Kong, like actually got out. And I tried to speak to her and she just said, absolutely not. We're not speaking to journalists anymore. And that was like a really spooky thing to happen.
Oh, it is spooky, isn't it? Some people. Yeah, I couldn't imagine that. And that's like a bit close to home, isn't it? Where you think, oh, it's not just something you're reading about, it's something that you're involved with. Yeah. And sometimes making that branch over to it and you're like, oh my goodness. Like I did a piece about a woman that was filmed on secretly. I did a piece about it a couple of years ago and it happened in the city I live in. That was close to home. And it was just suddenly, it was something that I'm not reading about in like on Twitter or something that I'm not reading about on a confession page on LinkedIn. I'm like listening to her firsthand experience. It touches you, doesn't it? At one point you're like, oh, yeah. Oh my God, I'm reporting on something real life and really touching. Yeah.
But I will say, let's move on from this.
Moving
on and upwards.
We have a fantastic set of interviews from you, Sarah, which have, they've kind of like made their ways through Lincoln County Council. Obviously, these are in the aftermath of the local elections. You've interviewed Robert Parker, and I've then gone through the County Council. And on the request of Councillor Martin Hill, I have also interviewed another councillor. That would be Councillor Thomas Dyer. They've had the balance. So they're having like a mini argument without even speaking to each other here, but I think it'd be very interesting to listen to. So
how does it feel to have won your seat again? How was your reaction to that?
Well, mixed. It's good to win personally. Okay, so I've stood in Carhome now 8 times. First elected in 1989 and won each time as a Labour candidate. So it's good to know that what I'm doing is popular and acceptable to people. But more generally, you know, I'm the leader of the Labour group and we didn't do too well as a party. In fact, we're 70 seats and we've only got 4 councillors and they're all in Lincoln. So when it comes to the county council, it's a bit difficult to be able to argue that we are representing people from all over the county. We're just a Lincoln-based organisation now. So that's disappointing. But, you know, we're going to do our best to hold the controlling Conservative group to account.
Yeah, that's the main job, holding people to account. Could you, as much as you can, could you give me a brief outline of some of the main plans you have for the term, some ideas that are in your head, that stuff that you want to look into?
Well, there's 2 things. First of all, it's a question of being reactionary because the Conservatives got an agenda. They'll put it forward. We will argue and support them if necessary, where we think they're doing okay. But holding to account means, hey, what about this? And what about that? And have you thought about? So it's about scrutinising and challenging where we think there are issues. We will be promoting certain things that the Conservatives won't be promoting. street lighting being switched off, particularly important in Lincoln. Met with the student union, both at the Lincoln University and also Bishop Gross. There's a lot of people feeling frustrated that the Conservatives are not listening. And one of the issues is that this comes up every year, because there's a new student union comes in, and the people representing that particular cohort say, hey, you didn't listen to us, and we start all over again. And I have to say that it's particularly important for women. I have to say that, not that I want to, but it's often women who feel less able to go out at night or stay out at night and feel safe, because it is about the fear of crime and not just crime itself. So that's one thing. The other thing that we're big on is improving our contribution as a county to the environment. We have always argued that we should have zero carbon policies in place by 2030. The Conservative disagreed and said 2050 is plenty soon enough. We're going to be challenging that all the way to make sure that we can move to be carbon neutral by the end of this decade, not 3 decades later. They're two big things.
Yeah. Can I ask, what do you mean by carbon neutral? How do you define that? Is it emissions from cars? Is it general? Is it a general term?
Well, there's two points to it. So it's a good question. The first one is, we can be carbon neutral as a local authority, as an organisation, just like you can as an individual person. In other words, that you offset what you use in, say, in your motor car by doing other things. Okay, and yes, I am talking about the county council, but we need to act as a beacon, as a symbol of what's possible. Because once we can get people to buy in, then we can try to get the county council to the people of Lincolnshire to be carbon neutral as well. So that each time people make decisions, the first thing is, it's not a question of recycling, it's can I use what I've got already? Or can I do without? Because that's the real starting point, is not doing something rather than replacing it.
Yeah, and it's really important in terms of climate change and stuff like that, and seeing people empowered just be a bit more accountable for the environment would just be lovely, just because of all the things we're seeing in the world. You see it on a global, but you see it on a local level as well. And I think some people think it's a massive challenge, but really, if everyone just did a bit, I run a website on sustainability and climate crisis. And the amount of people I speak to, I don't know if you know them, I've spoken to the Lincoln Wombles. They're a litter picking group, and they're all across Lincoln. And the amount of lockdown litter they've seen, it's drastically gone up. And they just think that if we could hold people to account, and also organizations with single-use plastic, stuff like that, it's so much, not, I don't want to say easy, nothing's easy in this industry, but it could be small changes that we could just adapt and just. So yeah,
I know, and we have to build them into our lives, don't we?
Of course you do. That's people are so used to turning on the light, not wondering, oh, do I need to put on the light, what's that light causing, or the coal on the fire, or the petrol in the cars. It goes back and back. It's a cycle. My last question is, I've heard some news that some meetings are going to be in person again. Is that confirmed? And if so, how are you feeling about in-person meetings?
It's likely to be confirmed, simply because we don't have a choice. The government have said, and the courts have backed them, to say that, yes, it was acceptable to postpone meetings and hold them online, okay, but that emergency legislation was an emergency, okay, and emergency legislation powers that made it possible to have meetings online rather than in person can only be used for a year. An emergency that is longer than a year, it's tough, and new legislation will have to be brought if you want to have meetings as an option online rather than face-to-face. And the government is saying at the moment that they haven't got the parliamentary time in Parliament to allow that to happen. Now, that means essentially that the government is saying that you should go back to face-to-face. And there are many benefits to face-to-face, because One of the things that I think is important, and a lot of people agree with me, is that those people who take decisions should be accountable. And we want to see what they look like when they're arguing face to face. Now, that may sound a tad old-fashioned, but at the moment, the way that we conduct most of our business, particularly at a national level, is in Parliament, with Boris Johnson having to account, stand up there and be challenged. It's a world of difference when you're just on the other end of what you might call a PC. So, yes, that's the score. My position is that, yes, meetings should be held face-to-face so that people can see and challenge and be present and watch what's going on.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, because there's one thing, debating with someone, you can see their facial expressions once you've raised a really critical point and they're like, oh, you need to see that face-to-face. Yes, you could see it over a webcam, but it isn't the same. And especially for yourself, you're the opposition party, you're holding the main party to account. It's really important to hit those hard-line facts to them and to relay it over. So yeah, completely get that. That's all my questions, Robert. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Congratulations. That's good. Thank you so much. Have a lovely week. Bye.
And you.
Hello, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So you are just starting out as a new county councillor. You've moved up from city council, if I'm not right.
Yeah, so I'm the Conservative County Councillor for Waddington and Highcombe East, and I also sit on the City of Lincoln Council. I represent Witham Ward, and on the City of Lincoln Council, I'm the leader of the opposition.
That's fantastic. So you're doing both then?
Yeah, it'll keep me busy, but it's good fun.
It really must do. Sorry, I'm not doing very well here. So you've come into the county council. How's it feel to sort of join up with the county?
It's fantastic. I mean, the county council's conservative run. It had a big majority at the 2017 election. And again, the people of Lincolnshire have put their trust in us again. We've won 54 out of the 70 seats. So it's a privilege to be on the county council, but it's even better that it's a conservative majority county council.
It must be strange going from leader of the opposition to a party which is in power in that council.
Yeah, it is. I mean, on the City of Lincoln Council, obviously we're in opposition, so we don't make decisions. So being on the controlling group on the county council, it's great that we can be involved in implementing policies for the people of Lincolnshire. And we can obviously make the change that we want to make.
Do you have anything in mind to use that power for?
Yes, so in my own division, and it won't just benefit my division, it's obviously the whole of Lincoln and the Greater Lincoln area. It's the North Highcombe Relief Road. So last year, the government made most of the funding available for the North Highcombe Relief Road. I know it's a priority of the county council. So hopefully, all being well, by 2025, we can see some progress on the North Highcombe Relief Road. It'll complete the ring around Lincoln. So we'll have a bypass around the entire city. It will reduce the amount of traffic in the Lincoln area. It will bypass around the city. So that obviously benefits the residents of the Greater Lincoln area, but also it helps, it keeps the air in the city cleaner, because obviously all the vehicles are going around the city.
Hmm. Speaking of clean air, we were talking to one of your colleagues on the county council across the bench at Labour, and they were talking about carbon emissions. Do you have any response to what he said there about the carbon emissions?
Yeah, so I think Councillor Parker has put quite a negative tint on it, when really the county council, we've got a positive plan for climate change. The Conservative group, we were just re-elected, and a big part of our manifesto was the county council's green master plan. So it's a comprehensive document that lays out our path to carbon neutrality by 2050. But that is the target. But also, we're ahead of target already. I think we're at about 60% reduction of carbon emissions by on the 1990 baseline. So we're already part of the way there. And obviously, as I've said to you, there's infrastructure projects that are also going to reduce the carbon emissions of Lincolnshire, but also there's other things as well. So COVID-19 has made us realise there's new ways of working. So county council officers and councillors, we can do a lot more home working now, which obviously that cuts down on carbon emissions for people commuting across the county.
Okay, so you shouldn't have to commute as much, and that'll be good. Do you think then that this sort of lockdown practice of working from home, do you think this will carry on then through and after lockdown?
I think what lockdown's done, it forced organisations to go to remote and home working. And now it's happened. Organisations have been able to see the benefits of home working. So it's made organisations try to think, how can they, you know, preserve some of that going forward? And obviously there's the environmental benefits, but I know there's a lot of personal benefits for those that want to work from home.
So with all these positives of, you know, obviously reducing carbon emissions and being generally greener, why then is it that the goalpost of 2030 that the Labour Party have forward, why does that seem too soon for the Conservative Party, do you think?
Well, the Labour Party are in opposition, so they're always going to try and one up the controlling administration. But the County Council is a big organisation, and there's, you know, there's a lot that has to be done to get to net zero. But I think that what we've got in place, it's comprehensive. There's a plan there in place by 2050. But of course, we're going to try and do as much as we can to speed that up. But I think it's only sensible and prudent to have a realistic target and deadline. And Councillor Parker, obviously, he set the 2030 target, but how much detail's in that? Is it really achievable, or is it just political spin? I think with climate change, it's really important that we take a realistic approach, but also an ambitious approach. And that's what the County Council has.
Okay, excellent. Another comment that has been in speculation recently was about the High Street. A lot of people are saying that many shops on the High Street have been closing down and something needs to be done to revitalise it. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, the COVID-19, obviously, it's been really difficult for everyone, but of course the hospitality industry, and that's what our High Street in Lincoln, for example, is made up of quite a lot of, but not just hospitality, other businesses and organisations as well. So the government, of course, they've given the City of Lincoln almost £20 million for the Towns Fund scheme. So that investment in the City of Lincoln should help the High Street. There's all various projects happening in the City of Lincoln. There's also the Levelling Up Fund, where hopefully we can have a positive bid there in Lincoln. But obviously there's still more that can be done. So I know the County Council works incredibly closely with organisations like the LEP and other organisations in the city to try and boost visitors on the High Street. And part of that is the tourist and the visitor economy. Lincoln is a tourist destination. It's a beautiful city, a beautiful cathedral, a wonderful castle, and there's all sorts to explore in Lincoln. So I think as we come out of lockdown, as people start to move and visit places in the UK, we've got to make sure that Lincoln's on the map and it's definitely a tourist destination. Now, I think that's a key part of it, because tourists obviously go and use the High Street. They use the shops, they use the restaurants, they use the bars. So it's really important, I think, as we unlock, we make sure that Lincoln is on the map as a tourist destination.
Okay. There's a lot of talk about revitalising the heritage that I've seen over lockdown. Is that something that you'd be interested in to boost that tourism?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Lincoln's a historic city, so our heritage is the cathedral, the castle. There's plans with the collection, the County Council's collection that we've got in the City of Lincoln. So there's a lot to be done there. But of course, there's wider Lincolnshire as well. So you've got to remember the East Coast, the tourist destinations there. And there's historic venues across the whole of the County of Lincolnshire. So there's a lot to offer in for the whole of Lincolnshire. And I see a positive future for Lincolnshire in relation to the visitor and tourist economy.
Excellent. That all sounds quite wonderful. Now, just a little bit about the elections before we sign off, I think. So did you enjoy the elections? I know they can be a lot of fun and very stressful at the same time.
See, after being locked up for a year with COVID-19 restrictions, it was great to get out campaigning, meeting people. And it really gives you the opportunity to basically make sure that you're still representative of your constituents. And that's really important as local politicians. And I know I've had so many positive comments about the various aspects in our election literature. So yeah, it's given me confidence that we're doing the right thing in Lincoln and Lincolnshire. You know, so the County Council results were very positive for the Conservative Party. And they're also very positive for the City of Lincoln elections in the City of Lincoln as well, where the Conservative Party might not be in control of the council, but we won the popular vote in the City of Lincoln. So it's very positive.
OK, that's fantastic. Now, is there anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
Is there anything you'd like me to add? No, I mean, thank you very much for having me on. And hopefully I can speak with you again soon.
Oh, we really look forward to it. You can come on and speak with us anytime, Tom. That's been absolutely fantastic. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so that was Councillor Thomas Dyer for the Conservative Party responding to Robert Parker Obviously, your interview that you did with her, with him, sorry, Sarah. Yeah. So, yeah, that was fascinating to see the aftermath of the general elections there. How was it? What was it like looking at that, covering that?
It's always been interesting. I've got quite a good friendship with Robert Parker now. He helps me a lot with my university assessments. He's always a quick response. And he's really good on Zoom. He's really good at using it. And just like, I'd say he's better than me. He's just got it. He knows it. He's there in the meeting before I am. And he's always, there's never a question I can't ask. I always say to him, look, if you can't answer. And he's like, nope, I'll answer it. I've got you. And it was interesting seeing his plans about streetlights. And he spoke a lot about how every year when a new year of university students show up from all across the UK, one big thing that always happens is people being really sad about the times that streetlights are turned off in Lincoln, which is about 10, 11pm, around that time. I know for a fact it's different in different parts. And there's always a petition. I don't know if you see it going around on Facebook, always a petition. We want to keep them on longer. And the council go, we can't do it because of this, this and this. And they do try. And Robert Parker's had enough. He goes, no. He's trying, campaigning really hard for that at the minute. So that was interesting to hear about. And obviously a lot about climate change, which I think is very interesting. A very interesting topic of different ways of tackling it, because he speaks a lot about how individuals, and we all know how we can tackle it as individuals with carbon footprints and stuff like that. But it's an organisation tackling it like that, which is really interesting to speak about, and quizzing him on practical stuff. Like I got him to define the word carbon neutral. I don't really know what that means or what do you mean by that? Because sometimes they'll have these big terms which will seem like they're, I'm trying to think of an example, which will seem like they're completely disregarding one thing, like carbon neutral. It does mean completely carbon neutral, no carbon, but in some definitions it can mean a tiny bit of carbon. Do you know what I mean? Like some definitions, they don't rule stuff out. So I wanted to make sure of that, which is
clear. Yeah, because on the same page as well. I think it was that comment about carbon neutrality which really sort of ricocheted its way through the county council. They wanted to discuss that. And obviously in those clips that you just heard there, Thomas Dyer was very clear in saying that the Conservatives believe that 2030 isn't realistic and that, you know, you can't be carbon neutral by then. It just puts too much strain on the economy. But at the same time, he's also saying that, due to the pandemic mostly, and also due to like reform, that we're actually closer to carbon neutrality than we ever thought we would be. So we're actually ahead of schedule, but they're still sticking to that 2050 mark. So yeah, there was a big fight there to watch.
I thought they would be. I did start something there. But yeah, it's interesting because I was reading about the effects of sustainability from lockdown. I do a website on it actually. I've looked into it quite, and stuff like carbon, like car emissions, stuff like that, the big ones that we tend to think of when we think of like fossil fuels, carbon, all the bad stuff, that went down. But online, so e-commerce, which is online retailing, online shopping, that grew by 46%. That skyrocketed during lockdown because people were buying on online and stuff like that. And then you've got to look into the sustainability of that. And every little aspect has something which is unsustainable. So although that one thing went down, another thing skyrocketed, which probably offset the other thing. It's crazy.
Where's that website for people to look at?
It's called at Fashion Lockdown Evolution, and it is, I love it so much. It's something that I've just made this week for an assessment, but I spoke to loads of interesting people, and it's just looking at sustainability and the effects of like what lockdown did on the environment, which I don't think many people have looked into. And I got to speak to an Instagram influencer, which was quite interesting. Yeah. Great. She told me all about how she makes money off posts. And it's nice. The life I want to have. So if anyone wants to make me one, please make me one. Very interesting.
Honestly, you hear so much about influencers now, but I never really knew how it worked, really, how they got paid and what they had to do. So it was interesting. And I love your website. I think it's great.
Oh, thank you. I love it so much too. It took ages. I'm not a tech wizard, so I was constantly like, it's on WordPress, so I was just battling away at that, and it finally got done, which I'm very excited about. But yeah, learning about Instagram was very cool. They either get paid for posts, they get sent free things like affiliated posts, free things that they've got to try on in a post, or they get invited to events, stuff like loads of stuff. It's amazing. I really want to be one. I'd love to be one.
Well,
I'm joking, I'd be a journalist.
You can be both. Well, right. So we do have to move along because we are steadily running out of time. We're being too interesting, which is never usually a problem, but this is what's happening. We have an interview here, which I think is fantastic. It's a good example of journalism in the wild. This was something that was never supposed to be aired. Let's make this clear for starters. But this is generally how we collect information for our stories. Chelsea Abbott, over the phone, a phone interview she recorded with Richard Watts, one of the curators of the Cathedral Museum. One of the curators of the Lincolnshire Heritage Explorer. I spoke to the curator of the Cathedral Museum separately in the bulletin. And the Lincolnshire Heritage Explorer, you can find it online through the County Council website. Basically, you can go and look at ruins. Chelsea has more on that, so here she is.
I think I explained it in the email, but I was just going to ask you a few questions about the History Heritage Explorer.
Absolutely, yeah. The Lincolnshire Heritage Explorer. And it's just recently launched, and we're hoping people find it fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Could you just tell me a little bit more about what it is and how it works?
Yeah, of course. So just to explain a bit more detail, I manage what is called the Lincolnshire Historic Environment Record, and that is the database of all the known archaeological sites and historic buildings in the county. It's a very extensive database. It's used in all sorts of different applications to advise the planning process and forestry, any kind of land management changes. But it's also a fantastic research tool that that tells people all about the huge, amazing wealth of archaeology and heritage assets that are around them in their local environment. What we've just launched is the Lincolnshire Heritage Explorer, which takes all those records from the HER, and it makes them much more publicly accessible. People can go to this new website and they can find out all sorts of amazing records on amazing archaeology and features and history in their area in a much more user-friendly way, really easy to use functions, map searches. So people can find out all the sorts of amazing, brilliant heritage features that have been recorded in the areas that they live.
Do you think it will get more people in Lincoln using this and then going out and actually seeing these different
places? Oh, absolutely. We really hope so. The records available, the HER essentially acts as a signpost to tell people where further information can be found. So all of these records of buildings and archaeological sites or artifacts, things like prehistoric hand axes, the records will tell you where you can find more information, whether that's reports, archaeological reports that are available online, or the sites themselves, where you can visit and see the buildings or the earthworks or the deserted medieval villages or Roman forts or castles that might be around in the environment, or if it's artifacts that might be in the local museums, whether that's the collection in Lincoln or Grantham Museum, etc. And so, using the Heritage Explorer, you can find out much more information about these sites and dive into the history and actually what we know about how they've been explored, any kind of investigations that might have gone on, sort of building surveys, geophysical surveys, any excavations, people going out and doing metal detecting on areas and finding different objects that they then reported through the authorities through the treasure process and things like that. So it's a fantastic resource that we hope will inspire people just to have a look around and see what's in their local environment and get involved with archaeology. We're hoping the website itself does have a link to a wide variety of other online heritage resources that people might find interesting, and we're hoping to develop the Heritage Explorer in future to tell them about projects their own team is working on. Whether that's, we've got a project coming up to investigate pubs, historic pubs in the county, and the kind of the social and historic contribution that those have made to our local environment.
that sounds really interesting, actually. I quite look forward to seeing that. Could you tell me what it was like working on this? Like, how long have you guys been collecting these records and putting it together for the site?
All right, well, the historic environment record has been in existence since the sort of 1970s. I mean, it originally started out as lots of, you know, maps with little pins in them and record cards that were all handwritten. And obviously, as time gone by, that's been computerized, and it's now on a huge database. There's over 50,000 monuments, records, features in landscape that we know about, and all, records about all sorts of different excavations and investigations of these places. But most of that's not been publicly accessible. People have been able to ask us questions about this all the time, but by making this new website, we're hopefully making it much more easier for people to find out themselves and to dive into the archaeology and the history there. So the website itself, it's taken a good 6 months to build. We've had some huge support from the software developers, a company called Exegesis that helped us make the site. They've been fantastic. And we're really pleased with the product that we've, the final outcome that we've made, that we've created. It's really easy to use, super friendly. It's got a really simple map interface that people can just search around and look at all the different features and records. But more than anything, it makes it really easy for them to get in touch with us if they want to ask more questions, because we're always happy to help people investigate these sites in further detail. But just making it much more easy for people to find this out, this information out, we're really pleased with what was created here.
Yeah, it looks really good. I had a lot of fun having a go at it and having a look at everything over the past few days.
Okay, so that was Chelsea Abbott talking to Richard Watts for the Lincolnshire Heritage Explorer. You can find that on the County Council website. Now, it is time for my favourite part of the whole session here. And unfortunately, it's going to be a bit shorter than usual, which is annoying because we've just been too good. And this is the What Music Have Journalists Been Listening To This Week? So what music have we been listening to this week?
So this week, me and my two flatmates, shout out to Beth and Jade, have had this song on loop while we've been cooking in the kitchen, if we've been just chilling out in the living room. We've had this song on all week and it's catchy. And we've heard it on TikTok and we have not stopped playing it since. So this song is called No Roots and it's by Alice Merton.
I like digging holes and hiding things inside them. When I grow old, I hope I won't forget to find them. 'Cause I've got memories and travel like gypsies in the night. I build a home and wait for someone to tear it down. Then pack it up in boxes, head for the next town I'm in. 'Cause I've got memories and travel like gypsies in the night. I've got no roots, but my home was never on the ground. I've got no roots, but my home was never on the ground. I've got no roots. I've got no roots. I've got no roots, but my home was never on the ground. I've got no roots, but my home was never on the ground. I've got no
ground. I got no
and them. I've got no boots.
Merton's No Roots. Now that is the end of Siren News Extra. I'm afraid we just ran out of time. We over-recorded. It tends to happen here. So that is a goodbye from me, Sarah, and Lucy. And you can join us again next week for more news and sport in Lincoln. But do look out, because things will be changing. The university time has just finished, so we'll be a little bit short-staffed. A little bit more short-staffed than usual, but Siren isn't going anywhere anytime soon. So you can reliably turn up next week and find us in your favourite place on Siren News Extra. See you then. Goodbye.
This is Siren Radio.
You've been listening to Siren Radio News Extra just after 5 every Friday here on Siren Radio.
Siren.
The new Siren Radio.
107.3.
This is Siren Radio.